pretty much for that for the housekeeping issues. So a little bit about who's our guest presenter tonight. It'll be Bill Tenney Britton, who is with 21st Century Strategies, what used to be the East and Bandy Network. And he is the senior editor of Net Results Magazine. He's an ordained pastor and worked in both transformational context as well as new church development context. He and his wife have a program that they do on Blog Talk Radio called Church Talk Radio, and we'll send you information afterwards as to how you can listen in to some of their archives or some of their issues afterwards. The thing that I like about Bill is that he being the senior editor of Net Results, which is a magazine that is a digital magazine now that's focused on practical strategies for church growth and personal evangelism. I've been a reader of this magazine for about 10 years. And in his role as the editor, that gives him the breadth of knowledge into trends, what is working. And that magazine has helped thousands of timid witnesses share their faith with greater confidence. He also writes a blog as well at BillTenneyBritton.com that's chock full of practical tools and strategies that you can use starting tomorrow. And his church planting experiences give him a lot of insights that can help you share your faith more readily, naturally, and easily. And so tonight's presentation is a sample of what they do in their two-day Hitchhiker's Guide to Evangelism seminar. And at the end, I'm sure that Bill will let us know when around the nation some of his upcoming seminars are going to be. And so with that, I will see if I can successfully turn this over to Bill and let him come on board. Oh, where'd he go?
I'm here if you're here.
Okay. Well, I want to make you the presenter. Let's see here. Well, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
Let's see.
After an introduction like that, I'm not sure I really actually want to open my mouth. Maybe just shush, because it's going to be pretty much downhill from here.
Oh, my goodness. Bill, I can't find your thing on my screen to give you the control of the screen. Well, isn't that just awful?
There you are. Technology at its best. You know, once upon a time, we didn't used to have computers. We didn't used to have cell phones. We didn't used to have the Internet. Bottom line is, if worst comes to worst, we can talk our way through it. And everyone's going to get a copy of the handout afterwards anyway, so...
Certainly.
It wouldn't be the worst thing. And I tell you what, why don't I just go ahead and start, Chris?
Yeah,
And if you can figure it out, great. And if you can't, you know what? I will just muddle through. And I'll just start off by saying that the first part of this presentation isn't a part of the slideshow. There's a large number of folks who go to church who really don't know what to say. They don't know how to have a spiritual conversation, and they really don't have an answer to the 1 Peter 3:15 question, which is to always be ready to share the reason for your hope to anyone who asks. There's a presumption there that people are asking. And what we find is most Christians aren't getting those questions, and part of that is because the reality is that, the number one reason people don't go to church, so they say, is because of the hypocrites. And statistically, we know that Christians, by and large, with a quote marks around the word Christian, Christians don't behave significantly different than their neighbors. They spend their money on the same thing the neighbors spend their money on. They spend their time the same way, pretty much how their neighbors spend the time. The primary difference between a practicing Christian and someone who's not a Christian is the Sunday morning hour at 11 o'clock or 10:30 or whatever. And that's the primary behavioral difference that most people see. And so there's this real resistance, A, to church, but B, to Christians who live it but aren't necessarily walking it. And so the conversations aren't coming up. Christians, though, who are walking it, without being obnoxious about it, I might add, they get conversations, pure and simple. So having said that, what we found is critical in our seminars across the United States is helping people come up with, and it's not a come up with like, okay, let's figure this out. But in our fast-paced world, we just don't have time or haven't taken the time to sit down and reflect on our life. We haven't sat down and taken the time to reflect on who Jesus is for us. And so we come to tonight's presentation about what's my motivation, what's our motivation, what is it that motivates you to do evangelism. And This is part of the Hitchhiker's Guide to Evangelism book, although I'll tell you up front that the tools that we're going to share tonight are outside of that book. This is a part of the seminar that we've developed. But let's jump in. Let's jump in. Come on, move. All right, we'll do it this way. There we are. So what's evangelism? If you go to define evangelism, what is it? And what we found is if we go and ask folks, and we've done internet searches and, you know, polls and all that kind of stuff, here's the general answers we get. Evangelism is explaining to a person what it means to be a Christian and how to become one. All of that, I'll tell you up front, that sounds really good. That the reality is that's the method I used to use. Whip out the Bible and tell someone what it takes to be a Christian and how to become one. It's a conversion experience. Second, preaching the gospel.
Let me throw in real quickly that my favorite definition of evangelism that I have run into in doing the seminars that I do is finding the Presbyterians in my neighborhood.
Oh, excellent. Yes, that's always a good one. That's how we used to start churches. And it used to be an effective way of starting churches. You put up a sign that said, Methodists come here, and all the Methodists in town shut up. It doesn't work very well anymore. The problem is that all the Methodists who want to go to church, guess what? They're in church.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are. Same with the Presbyterians and the Baptists and the Disciples of Christ and Church of Christ and all the rest. So, yeah, exactly. Excellent, excellent, Chris. I'll add that to my list. So, preaching the gospel. Sometimes there are those who define evangelism as just the matter of preaching. Saving the lost is a common definition. You know, we're going to have to save the lost. And I'll tell you up front, there's a whole lot of people who really resent the thought that they're lost. They know exactly where they are. They sort of wonder where you are, though. Proselytizing, a big ugly word that is actually means exactly what it says, helping someone move from one faith to another. And there's a whole lot of interesting parts that go along with that. And just a real quick piece is to say that in the United States, because we have this very high value of freedom of religion, and that it is okay for you to believe what you want to believe. And I'm not saying that's wrong, okay? Don't hear me saying that. What I'm saying, though, is because of that, there's a very strong hesitancy of Christians to share their faith with someone who might believe differently because, hey, it's okay for them to believe that way. And so, you know, you dare not share your faith with a Muslim, or you dare not share your faith with a Jew. In fact, recently, when the Pope came out and said we need to start sharing our faith with the Jews again, mainline Christianity in the United States raised up as one and said, oh no, they have their faith. Why would we do this? So proselytizing has a real bad rap in our culture. I could go into lots of reasons why proselytizing is really okay, but it's not about beating anyone up over the gospel. It's about having a conversation. Having a conversation with your local Buddhist might be really eye-opening for both of you. Paul Little says that evangelism is one beggar telling another beggar where to find food, sort of a cute metaphor. Faith sharing, which is, be real honest with you, that's probably one of my favorite understandings of evangelism. That's one I lean on. And, of course, the word evangelism, literally from Greek, means telling and good news. So it's sharing the good news, that good news being of Jesus Christ. And so those are some of the definitions of evangelism, and we're going to talk a little bit about how I define evangelism, at least for this seminar and for the seminars that I do across the nation, but we're going to get there in a minute. I want to talk about the motivation. Why do Christians do evangelism? What is it that compels them to do evangelism? And so, you know, the first thing you can see up there on the screen is fear, guilt, and shame. Fear, guilt, and shame are three reasons why some people do evangelism. They're afraid that maybe they'll not make it into heaven if they don't share. Or they feel guilty because, you know, they're a real disciple does evangelism. Or they're ashamed. You know, they're ashamed of not or the inability to share. So, you know, that's some of the reasons that some people might do evangelism. Some do it because Jesus said so. Jesus said it, I believe it, and that settles it, so to speak. Jesus gave the great commandment, go into all the world and make disciples. His last words on earth was, you shall be my witnesses in, you know, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. You know, Jesus said go, and therefore we do. So that's why Some might do evangelism. Here's one that pastors may not honestly admit to, but might be some serious truth nonetheless, is to grow the church. Because if you're going to go up in the church world, if you're going to, if you will, graduate to a larger church or get called to a larger church, which means a larger salary and so on and so forth, you know, you need to grow the church. And so some people, some pastors and others, are doing evangelism so they can grow the church. And there are those who just, you know, who say, well, they can't not do it. They just can't not. They have to do it. It's just who they are. It's ingrained. So these are some of the reasons why Christians do evangelism. So, you know, for those of you who are listening in, think for a moment, which one of those compels you to do evangelism? Which of those do you think compels those that you know in your congregation, Christians you know, to do evangelism? And then let me share a little secret with you. The reality is very few Christians are doing evangelism. If Christians were doing evangelism wholesale, if we were doing it, you know, left, right, and center, our church would not be in the state that it's in today. In fact, our church today is in serious trouble in North America. We are we've been losing almost 1 million members a year for almost a decade. Chris, just to you know, mention the Presbyterians, they're the in the words of the title of that popular show, they're the biggest losers. They're the fastest shrinking denomination in the United States, followed with by either the Episcopalians or the Methodists, depending on which day you're looking. And the rest of the main line is right in tow there. But it's not just the main line. The Southern Baptists released this year that they're not able to keep up with the population growth anymore. And the reality is that we're still closing more churches than we're starting. The United States is in real trouble. And if Christians were doing evangelism, then that wouldn't be the case. So the reality is very few Christians do evangelism. And those who do, they do so because of an experience they have that they can share with Jesus. That's the reality. That very few Christians do evangelism, and those who do, do so because of an experience with Jesus. And so, for the rest of the evening, we're going to look at the answer to this question. What I call the ultimate question.
Now, Bill, just to chime in, Martha Gay Reese's research in unbinding the gospel with the 1,200 pastors and lay leaders that she spoke with, one of the key factors in evangelism was a love for God, that where people had experienced God's love. And right. It very, very much goes to your point. So there's a lot of statistical evidence as well that one of the biggest fuels for evangelism is those who have had a personal encounter with God through Jesus Christ.
That's exactly right. And it's not just that they've had one, but that they can express it.
That is correct.
They've found ways in which to share that. You see, the reality, Chris, and those of you listening on, is that, you know, your next-door neighbor, your unconnected coworker, even your unconnected family, they really don't care about what you know. They don't care that you can quote the Bible. It doesn't impress them. They don't care that you have Reformed theology or Arminian theology or whatever kind of theology down pat. What they really care about, and what we've found through research and through conversations and through working with churches all across America, and especially work with unchurched all across America, what people are looking for is the answer to the question, does your religion, does your faith work for you? Is it making a difference in your life? And that's, when we talk about does your faith work for you, that's the question they're looking for, is it working in your life? Is it making a difference? Is it helping you to decide how you're going to spend your time? Is it helping you or even demanding how you're going to spend your money? Is it changing the way you treat people? Is it changing the way that you make every decision in your life? And if it is, people are interested. And if it doesn't, people will look somewhere else. It's why today There's such an interest in all sorts of different religions because people are looking for something that works. They're looking for something that changes lives. And I'll throw this statistic out. Do you know, Chris, what the one of the only denominations, and I use that term extremely liberally here, extremely loosely, one of the only quote-unquote denominations that's growing in the United States? And actually, most people say cults, but let's just go with denominations and be kind.
The Mormons.
They're growing because their people, the people who are Mormons, live what they preach. They live and make decisions in their lives based on their belief system, and it affects every part of their life. And they're growing. They're one of the only religions, denominations, whatever, that is growing in the United States. You know, I mean, they're growing. The Baptists are shrinking. That's just a novel thought that that could happen. But it is because their faith makes a difference in their lives. And that's what people are looking for. They don't care what you know. They want to know who you know, and is it affecting your life? Does it change the way you make decisions? And so, again, what we find is that people don't have a way of sharing their faith. They don't have a way of sharing how Jesus has affected their lives. They don't have a way, they don't have a story. They have not reflected on what it is about Jesus, what is about my relationship with Jesus that my neighbor can't live without or can't live without knowing. What is it about my relationship that is just so wow that people need to know about it, that they just need to know about it. And so again, it's about my relationship. It's about personal. Because you see, I can philosophically and academically attack any number of things you say you believe that you point to the Bible. I can attack all your knowledge all day long, but I can't really effectively launch an attack or really discount, other than to consider you crazy, what you say is something you've experienced. I can't look at you and say, that's not true. Well, I can, but it's not as likely to come out as if you say, well, Jesus said such and such, or the Bible says such and such. The Bible says all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Well, okay, that's nice. What does that mean? But this morning when I was praying, it was very clear Jesus was saying to me, wow, you hear from Jesus? Now there's a conversation. So what is it about your relationship your neighbors can't live without? And so that's what we're going to look at. We're going to take a little bit of time this evening, and we're going to help you walk through the answer to this question for you. And here's the key is, I can't answer it for you. This is really about your relationship with Jesus Christ, and what is it about your relationship that just has changed your life in various ways. And so we're going to look at what I call the five faces of Jesus. And as I share these, I'm going to give an example for each one. Just a real brief example for each one of someone I know who relates to this image, this relationship of Jesus. And I want you to look for which is the one that really resonates with your heart, which is the one that resonates with your life and says, yeah, they all will in some ways, but we're looking for the one that just it helps propel your story, that tells who you are in relationship. And I'll share mine as we go when we get there. And I'll give you some examples. So the first face of Jesus that we come across is the companion. Jesus is a companion. And Jesus is a companion is very, I don't say popular, but is people who have lives that, where they've lost someone or never had someone, and Jesus as a companion becomes there, if you were, their chief metaphor. An example is a woman named Evelyn. She was our nanny. She didn't live with us, but she was an 80-some-year-old woman who took care of our children while we were in seminary. And Nanny was a widow, had been widowed for years. And for her, Jesus was with her all the time. Jesus was her comfort, who walked with her day in and day out and would never leave her. And she could have conversations and did have conversations with Jesus. Jesus was just there for her, never left her alone. And so for some of the people in your congregations, and maybe for some of you listening, Jesus as a companion is a compelling image of who Jesus is for you. You just would be lost without Jesus. He's with you all the time. Another image is Jesus as rescuer. And I'll tell you up front, this is my wife's primary metaphor of Jesus. My wife, when she was young, ran away from home. Her mom died when she was 10. Her father became an alcoholic and removed them from church. They'd been in church up until the time my wife was 10, but said that God could not be a God, because God would never, if there was a God, he wouldn't have taken the only thing he loved. And so by the time my soon-to-be wife, or later wife, Chris, she became a drug addict, and she lived on the streets of Pittsburgh for years, literally doing those things that you have to do to live on the streets and be able to buy McDonald's hamburgers or whatever that she was buying to, you know, to get on with life. And when she was in her 20s, she had made her way to Atlanta. And one Sunday morning, for whatever reason, she had no idea why, she had this move in her life that just compelled her to go to church. She was living in inner city Atlanta. So she put on the dress that she'd stolen the week before, and she made it to church. And at that moment, Jesus reached down and touched her, and her life was different. It took her 5 years to get clean and sober. It took her a long time to, she dropped out of high school. She had to start all over. But now she's a doctor in the theology world, and has worked with churches all around the nation and worked with people all around the nation. Jesus rescued her. Then she'll tell you that Jesus pulled her out of the gutter. That's the image of Jesus that she relates to. Maybe it's one that you relate to. The third is Jesus' healer. I have a friend who relates to Jesus' healer more than anything else. She had a child who had a major heart defect. And I need to preface this by telling you that I'm a mainliner. I was raised by a scientist, and all this sort of stuff was just sort of, yeah, whatever, in my life. And that Jesus, you know, worked everything through natural means. God was, you know, sort of removed from the world, so to speak. Well, this woman had a child who had a heart defect, and it was sort of a very serious heart defect. And on a Monday night, she called this church and had been was related to someone in the church. And the church said, yeah, we'd pray for this family. And on Thursday, one of the small groups met, and a woman who was very committed to prayer for healing spent all night praying for this child to be healed. And on Friday morning, I happened to be going to the hospital and to be with the family. And as I walked up to the families, they were actually coming out of the surgical consult. They were just glowing, and it was like, okay, what's going on? Because the child was scheduled for open heart surgery in 2 days, and the doctor had done CAT scans again, and the baby's heart was whole, altogether, perfect. No problems ever since. It's, you know, I can't explain it. It's just what happens. And this family relates to Jesus as a healer, that Jesus reached down and healed the daughter, and that for them, that's the metaphor of Jesus. When they talk about Jesus, that's what comes up, is how Jesus brought healing to that family. You may know people in your church that may not have had a physical healing like that, but have had healings, removals from addictions, as different from rescuer or other kinds of healing that you know of. The fourth is Jesus' guide, and I'll tell you, this is mine. That my life was pretty well, you know, I've been a Christian all my life. I can't remember, there's never a time in my life I did not believe in Jesus. Jesus has just always been there with me and for me. And I can remember, you know, the times like on Peter, you know, like Peter did. You know, I can remember I got baptized and have walked through my life and so on. But my life was relatively aimless. Although I was committed to Jesus, I really wasn't committed to following Jesus per se. Always, you know, always there for me, and I was tried to always be there for him. But just, you know, my resume from the time I was 17 till 25 is just embarrassing, just totally embarrassing. And I mean, because I've had so many jobs trying to find what I wanted to do with my life. There was a time in my time when I was 25 where, in prayer, it became very clear that Jesus was saying, okay, I've got work for you to do. Are you going to follow me, or are you just going to play games? And at that point, I turned, if you will, my life and my will over to the care of Jesus Christ and said, okay, I'll follow. You go on ahead of me. You tell me where you want to go and where you want me to go, and I'll follow. And so Jesus is my guide. He's given my life purpose. He's given my life meaning. And, you know, it is, for me, it's exciting. I never know where Jesus is going to take me. I've lived in Atlanta where I planted churches. I lived in Seattle where I planted churches. Lived in middle America where I've done church transformations. You just never know where Jesus is going to send me. It's like a roller coaster. And I throw my hands up and just scream in glee as we go over one hill to the next. And that's the Jesus that I relate to. That may be the kind of the Jesus you relate to. The Jesus is a guide who takes you wherever it is that you need to go. And finally, there's Jesus as promise keeper. And I'll tell you that this is an image that is not as prevalent in the United States, I've found, as some of the other images. And yet this is a dynamic image of who Jesus is, a metaphor Jesus is. Jesus is promise keeper. Jesus keeps the promises that Jesus made. This is very, very prevalent in third world countries where people are don't have anything. And where their prospects aren't good. In America, you know, someone pointed out, we have houses, we have cars, we have bank accounts, and we have Jesus. In places like Guatemala and other places, and in fact, I had a conversation with someone from Guatemala, and this is actually what they said, you have cars, you have houses, you have bank accounts, you have Jesus. Here, we only got Jesus. That's all we've got. And so there's really a very much a promise of Jesus to come. Jesus in the next life. Jesus who has promised that no matter how bad it is, that Jesus will keep his promises and Jesus, somewhat of the companion, will be there with you. So either you or maybe someone you know can relate to that Jesus. And so you're going to, Chris, I understand you're going to make the PDF files of this show available to those who are listening.
Yes.
You know, you'll have this in front of you. And I just encourage you to take these and look at them. Come up with the one that really touches it. Who is Jesus for you? And then create yourself what I call a elevator testimony. Those of you who have been in sales know about elevator speeches. And an elevator speech is essentially sharing what you know or who you are and what you can do for someone in 30 seconds. Well, an elevator testimony is essentially that. It's if you have an opportunity for a spiritual conversation, it's not a rush thing. It's actually a conversation. You don't have an agenda. But if it comes up, you want to be able to share your testimony of who Jesus is for you, how Jesus has touched and moved your life. In my case, it would be how Jesus is a guide in 30 seconds long. That's why it's called a 30-second elevator speech, because you're be able to share it between floors on an elevator. It's based on your relationship with Jesus. That's what this is about you. This is about your relationship with Jesus. It's not about what you know about the Bible, and it's not about your relationship with the church. What I find is that people can talk about their relationship with the church pretty clearly, but they don't do a good job of talking about their relationship with Jesus. They can tell the church has always been there for them, but they can't tell, you know, two wits about what Jesus has done for them. So other than the die on the cross thing, which doesn't move, touch, and inspire a whole lot of people, it's a fact, but it doesn't really, they want to know how Jesus touched your life. And if that's a part of your life that really moves, touches, and inspires you, then you'll share that in a way that moves, touches, and inspires others. So when you write your testimony, and you need to jot it down just so you sort of work through, you want to reflect on it. It's something that we Americans don't do very well, is reflect. So take a few minutes, take 5-10 minutes, and just, what was your life like before Jesus? You know, like I said, for me, you know, I was just wandering. I didn't have any purpose. I was trying to find what would fulfill my life, and it just wasn't there. So, you know, in prayer time, I was having prayer time, and I connected. You know, I heard Jesus real clearly saying, hey, you know, you want to have purpose in your life? You want to know where to go? How about following me? And where I say, you follow, and we'll see what happens. And I said, okay, you know, because I didn't have anything to lose. And so, you know, since then, my life has been a roller coaster in a good way. I go up, I go down, I go around the corners. My whole life has just got this exciting thing to it, this exciting purpose to it, and that's my life. And that, by the way, is my elevator speech, which I can expand to 5-10 minutes if needed. If people have other questions about it, I'm able to share and so on. And so that's really what I want you to do, or I'm inviting you to do, is to take some time. Which of the five faces of Jesus do you relate to? And then how would you share that? How would you share that? Because it really is all about conversations. And Chris, that was the last slide.
All right.
So
if you would go back, if you go back, Bill, to slide number 20 that has the all five images, I want to try something for people and give them a chance to kind of interact with us just a little bit. I know that they can't speak to us. I haven't quite figured out that part of the technology yet, where they can use their microphone and chime in. But I think over in each one of you, I think that over in your control panel, there should be a chat section. You should be able to find it. It's one of the menu options. You should have something like dashboard or audio or chat. And if what I'd like to do is to ask some of our attendees to fill out the chat window. It's a kind of which one of those five faces of Jesus that they connect with. Kind of what do they connect with? And give me a chance to see if, you know, if you connect with Jesus as kind of a rescuer, as kind of a primary metaphor, as Bill explained that his wife Chris experienced Jesus, then, you know, type that into the chat box. If you can find the chat box, I'm hoping you can. This will be an experiment on our part. And if you can't find the chat box, then just type it in the question and answer box as to which of those five faces that of Jesus that you would identify with. Now, while people are finding that, Bill, one question that has come in is, can it be a combination as the journey has gone along? Maybe a combination
of...
Oh,
no, it has to be my way or no way. It's got to be, you know, precisely my way. No, this is just a tool.
Uh-huh.
The whole point here is to give you a place to start. If you have a combination or if something, I mean, there's just five there. And my guess, there are literally hundreds of different ways to metaphors to connect with Jesus Christ. So, you know, these are just five that are very common. And if you have a different one or if a combination thereof, absolutely. This is not like it's a... hard and fast assignment. Again, this is about your relationship with Jesus that makes a difference. It's not about Bill Tenney Britton's method.
Okay.
Well, there you are.
Well, we've got a couple of people that are chiming in that they would see Jesus as guide, and a couple people that have chimed in as companion. I would, in my own story, I would lean more towards rescuer as well as companion. Probably forgiver is a particular metaphor that would really speak with me in terms of discovering the grace of Christ. One person has just chimed in that I'll just read the comment because it's way clear. The first big thing that changed when I got saved was no longer feeling alone, so companion is really big. Next, God is amazing in his constant guiding hand through dreams, and I journal, and he speaks. It's pretty awesome. Somebody else just chimes in. Jimmy just chimed in. I put rescuer and guide because of helping me find meaning and purpose. Someone else finally found the question and answer box with guide and rescuer. And so I think you know, some folks are kind of identifying with some of the particular metaphors, and I think it's very helpful that these five faces you've given people who some that you give people a way to talk about their experience with Jesus, and that is what I too have seen in my seminars, that people don't have a way of talking about their own experience with Jesus, and that's why I think that this is pretty important. Let's see. Oh, somebody just chimed in with this one. Jesus is someone who lets me know who really is in charge.
Oh, they are.
And I actually would agree with that. One of the metaphors that really has been sticking with me in recent months is just the sovereignty of God and the like. Now, there is a question that has come in. Bill, if you could revisit an example of a 30-second elevator talk.
Oh, give an example?
Yep.
Well,
give another one where we know it's coming.
Where we know it's coming. Okay, well...
All right, Bill, you and I just stepped in an elevator, so give me your talk.
Well, and of course, if you're in an elevator, in all actual fact, this is not how you start a conversation, because the first thing you'll do is, you know, if you were an unconnected person, Chris, and I stepped in an elevator, and it was the first time I met you, if I start spouting about my relationship with Jesus, it is not going anywhere.
That is correct.
You know, this whole thing is about relationships. I have to earn the right to share, and the only way I earn the right to share is if I have bothered to actually listen. My grandmother pointed out I have two ears and one mouth to be used in that proportion. People don't want to know about you so much as they want to tell you about them. And until you've earned the right to have that conversation, just willy-nilly walking in the elevator and saying, hey, you know, let me tell you. So that's important.
In that case, let's reset it up.
You and I are in a conversation, you know, we had a conversation, whatever, and maybe I'm wearing some sort of piece of jewelry that has struck you, you know, and what's that mean for you or whatever, and it'll be, you know, Chris, I guess what I would say is that, you know, in my life I was really you know, I didn't know what and where and why and how I was going. I just lived. Life actually lived me. I wasn't living life, and I just went from thing to thing. And I have the opportunity to make a connection with Jesus, literally, and in prayer. And Jesus and I had a conversation, and I essentially said, hey, where are we going? And Jesus said, have I got a game for you? And I've been following Jesus ever since, and literally helps decide, you know, every little decision in my life, and I just go, and it's exciting. I'm never bored, and the coolest thing is I thought it would be boring all the time, and it really isn't, and it's never something that I don't want to do. It's always going and finding real fulfillment and peace, and it's just awesome.
Well, fantastic.
I think 45 seconds. I had to un all of it.
Well,
the reality is the 30-second elevator speak is just a way in which you can get the three little tidbits down: your life before, how you got to connect with Jesus, and your life after. What I find, Chris, is when I share this, and I spend an inordinate amount of time with unchurched people, that, you know, the conversations come and go, and, you know, we don't talk about God a lot, but when it comes up, and it does come up in my case a lot, people know me as a Christian writer, and it comes up, and, you know, I get the opportunity to share, and generally it's more significantly than a 30-second piece, and it's not a monologue, it's a dialogue. They ask a question, I answer about my life and from my life. Mm-hmm. And that's how it works.
Well, as these slides will be mailed out about an hour after the presentation, people will have the opportunity to have that in front of them, and maybe to think through as well, kind of different ways that they can tell the same story through a different lens in terms of seeing, you know, what is kind of the primary picture of Jesus that they have in their life. As I look at my life and I tell the stories of God's current activity, I became a Christian 20 years ago out of an irreligious but wonderfully happy home. You know, I thought Jesus was born in December and died in April, and he did it every year. And so when I was a Christian, when I became a Christian 20 years ago, 25 years ago, when I was in high school, you know, that was a long time ago. And while it's wonderful that I have found my faith, because that moment was so long ago, and I've now spent a majority of my life as a Christian, I find that something that helps me in sharing my faith is talking about God's current activity in my life. And so using some of these five faces to tell stories of God's current activity is quite wonderful. I think of maybe an example for me right now is provider. We had a case where, you know, on Wednesday I received an email, and someone ordered 100 copies of the ebook that I wrote on hospitality. So I was like, yes, God, thank you for that provision. Well, the very next day I received a bill for just about the same amount for some other issues in my life. And so in one hand, right out the other. And for the last 6 to 8 months, I have been seeing a lot of that. And it might seem like a coincidence for the skeptic, but as I've been living this as part of my life story for the last 6 to 8 months, 18 months really, there's too many of those to overlook as coincidence. So I get to tell stories of God's current provision in my life. And so that's another way that those who are on a call with us can kind of practice their, you know, their current experiences of the reality of God in their life as well. I do want to kind of bring things up to an end. There's two questions that have come in, And let me say that what we'll do is that we're about 5 minutes in, 5 minutes from the scheduled end, and what Bill and I have agreed to do is we'll stick around for a little bit afterwards and keep answering questions, but the actual bulk of the presentation is over. After the webinar is over, you'll receive an email from me that will guide you to a new web page that I'll put up that has all the resources available. It'll have a YouTube video. It'll have links to a couple of Bill's books. It'll have all sorts of contact information on how to stay in touch with Bill. And then likewise, it'll have some information on my ebook, as well as, you know, some of you may want to pitch in for the cost of the webinar. There is an underlying cost to this that normally I absorb, but there are some people who like to pitch in for that, and they can do that for PayPal, and all that will come in afterwards. And so you'll get that in an email after about an hour from now, more or less. Now, some questions have come in. One from Chuck, and Bill, this is for you. In mainline churches, how do you equip members to start spiritual conversations?
Well, Chris, here's my pitch. That's what the seminars that we're doing across the United States are really all about. Is, you know, I do essentially a lengthened session of this, and then the rest of the seminar is about how do we get people in the pews to a place where they can do this. Well, and the short answer really is this. People have to have a story. That's where it has to begin. And unless they have a story, they can go no further. After that, it really is, there's a number of ways of doing it, but what I've found is that it's very helpful if we give our people tools so that they don't have to start the spiritual conversations, so that people start the spiritual conversations with them. If it's much easier to do 1 Peter 3:15 if people are actually asking the questions. And what I found over the years is there's a number of ways to do that. And I'll just share, you know, off the top, two ways that I've seen effectively used, one I've used and one that I know a vice president in Cox Cable Company, what he uses to invite those conversations. In my case, I like to spend a lot of time at Starbucks. I'm a former Seattleite, hope one day to get back, and Starbucks is my not my patron saint, but it's pretty close. And so I spend an inordinate amount of time in Starbucks. When I do, though, I never go without an interesting titled book to sit next to me. I may not read it. In fact, the book I carry is one that I wrote called I think it's got this. It's called Prayer for People Who Can't Sit Still. It's an unobnoxious title. It doesn't scream, hey, I'm a Christian, necessarily. It says I'm a spiritual person. And I sit that next to me, and I drink my coffee, and if I have my laptop, I work, or if I'm, you know, just chatting with people around me. And what I find is people will walk by me, they'll do a double take at the title of the book, and they say, wow, Prayer for People Who Can't Sit Still? I can't sit still. That was, you know, or I have a son who can't sit still. What's that book about? And it opens the door for a spiritual conversation. It opens the door a tiny crack. It's not the time for me to jump in with my five faces of Jesus thing, but that may come in the next couple minutes as we have that conversation. So that's one of the way I do it.
And I'll include a link to that book, by the way. I'll include a link to that book on the resource page afterwards.
Okay, thanks. The other example is... I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's a vice president at Cox Marketing in Atlanta, and he's a relatively big wig. He has his own office, and in his office he has a painting that he found and bought of Jesus standing over the shoulder of a businessman who was working at his desk, and it's clear Jesus is having a conversation or guiding whatever. He doesn't have any Bibles around. He doesn't wear crosses or all that. Now, he does have a Bible in his office, but it's not like sitting on his desk or whatever. And he says it's never been more interesting to him how many spiritual conversations that painting has just evoked. People come, and they'll be chit-chatting, and they'll see the painting, and they'll ask him about it, and it evokes the opportunity for him to have a spiritual conversation. So those are two examples of some of the things that I talk about in the seminar, and it really is it's about looking at ways to get people to start the conversation with us.
Now, I've read your book, Hitchhiker's Guide, which is kind of the pretext for this particular event tonight, and there's I think a whole chapter, chapter 4, about various things that you can use in your workspace, various things that can potentially invite conversations so that you don't have to go start spiritual conversations, but that the conversations find them to you. Another question that came in is a pretty simple question. If you've seen the YouTube video of Penn Jillette having received the Gideon Bible and how it short-circuited him, that the presenter of the Bible was pretty sane and actually looked him in the eye. So the question is, have you seen it?
I haven't. No, I haven't, but I will probably go looking for it.
All right, I'll throw that on the resource page as well. It's pretty popular on YouTube. And then one last person has chimed in for tonight is that she has found that asking a neighbor when they might share about a child's sickness or a job loss, now this person will say very non-threateningly, well, could I pray for you about that? And if they grant permission, right there, that quick prayer with a person opens the door. They've never had a person say no. This happened actually to us just recently. We, as part of our birthday celebrations, we pray for the person who is celebrating the birthday. So we had a rash of birthdays in our house, and we had several people who were and among our friends. So we had lots of birthday parties in the month of February. And so our neighbor, who is entirely unchurched, one of their daughters had a birthday. And while we didn't force, let's go pray for your daughter on this, she actually pulled us aside afterwards and said, please, would you pray with and for our daughter? And so I think that you know, has continued to invite further spiritual conversation as they get to see just some of our practices.
It's a very, very powerful tool. I that's one of the things we teach in the seminar. And yeah, it's people who are able to get over themselves and do that. It just has an incredibly positive effect in people's lives.
It does. I have often asked that question, as well as the presenter, the questioner, and I have had people tell me no, and I do respect that boundary, so that I may go pray for them in secret, but I won't pray for them on the spot if they have specifically said no. Well, with that, Bill, there haven't been any other questions that have come in. Do you want to quickly give dates, if you have them handy, of some of your upcoming Hitchhiker Guide seminars? I think you've got one or two coming up pretty soon.
I do have, and they really kick off. We have a lot up in the fall, and you can find those on the website. But coming up in May, and let me get to the right screen. In May, we have Hitchhiker's Guide in Cincinnati on May 12th. We are in Baltimore on May 14th. We are in Washington, D.C. the 15th and the 16th. That's a two-day seminar. And I think that is it until the fall. Then we have events in Pittsburgh and in Chicago and, all over the place, Midwest and the East primarily.
And
would love to, if you have a church that are interested in hosting. We haven't done much in the West Coast yet. So.
All right. Well, if you would be so kind as to send me that link, I will include that as well in the resource page so that people could see the upcoming schedule as to when you're going. Well, I think it's been a good night here, and I think that a good number of folks have stuck around. But let me close our time in prayer, and we'll call it a night. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
All right, Lauren, we're thankful for the time of practical training that we've had tonight. And we simply ask that you would equip us that we may be more confident and that we would have an easier time in talking about the active work of Jesus Christ in our life. That we would continue to grow comfortable speaking it, describing it, and sharing that with others. We pray, Lord, that even over the next few days that you would grant each one of us an open door that we don't have to walk through, but that somebody walks through and joins our conversation. For it's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
So with that, we'll just kind of start signing people off. In about an hour from now, you'll get a link to me from the resources page that'll be available afterwards. Many blessings.
And thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.